I've got a couple of like really kind of shining moments in my career. Giving Annie Lennox a hug.
Hey, this is Party Like a Rockstar podcast, and I'm your host, Joel. Today's episode is brought to you by Misha's Kind Foods. They're an LA-based small business making the world's finest non-dairy cheese on the market today. They're lactose-free, paleo, keto, kosher, perev, and 100% vegan. If you like what you see, check out the next video. If you like this video, please subscribe and like by clicking the little round button on the bottom right. To learn more about me or our other guests on the show, go to joelrode.com. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, or TikTok. The handle is Joel Rode. If you haven't already read my book, Memoir of a Roadie, it's now available through Amazon and paperback Kindle or as an audiobook. I hope you enjoy the show. Olivia Sebesky is a multimedia art director and motion graphics designer specializing in live entertainment. She's designed for artists and brands including James Taylor, Aerosmith, Hootie and the Blowfish, Darius Rucker, Simone Biles, Nike, Bloomberg, Peloton. Did I say it right?
Peloton.
Peloton, I asked before I started and I got it wrong still. Peloton, Soho House, TED Talks, New York Fashion Week, Middle Beast Sound Storm. Olivia was chosen as one of Live Design's 30 Under 30. And most recently, her work was featured in Like a Woman, a documentary about women who are breaking barriers working in male-dominated professions. Kirsten Larissa Hovland is a post-disciplinary artist specializing in pixels, programming, and light for music and performance. She has served as adjunct faculty in both the Video for Performance and Art for Technology programs at California Institute of the Arts. Hovland is a co-founder and principal artist at Electronic Countermeasures, an LA-based firm specializing in immersive experiences and environments of all shapes, sizes, and mediums. She's worked with the Foo Fighters, Beck, the 1975, Alt-J, and Paul McCartney. Colleen Wittenberg is a disguised programmer and operator and an LED technician. She's worked for John Mayer, U2, Aerosmith, Carrie Underwood. I got her name wrong. we'll have to go back because one of my favorites, there you go. Poor Carrie Underwood, Smashing Pumpkins, The Rolling Stones, Paul McCartney, Coldplay, and Janet Jackson. So which one is our favorite CD other than Olivia's CD? Because Olivia came out with a CD.
Oh my God, you went deep.
But it is streaming on Spotify, so it's easy to listen to.
Yes, I have 3 monthly listeners. It's a, you know, it's really good. I get all my royalty checks.
Yeah, the royalty. Don't feel too bad. I don't know if the big boys get big royalty checks off of Spotify anymore either. Actually, there is no anymore. It was never. So
yeah.
Anyway, have you guys all worked together?
We have. Yes. We have.
Lucky we just you. Did that Middle Beast Soundstorm.
Okay. What is that?
Oh my gosh. Boy.
I'm out of the loop.
It was a giant 4-day electronic festival in the desert. And so in Saudi Arabia.
Oh, yeah. Really neat.
Mm-hmm. I think I heard one of the guys say that at the end of it, they will have brought in close to 17,000 people from overseas to work on this festival.
That's incredible.
Yeah, they were having a hard time actually getting everybody travel visas because mm-hmm. it was too many for the whole country to process all at one time.
Wow. Yeah. All 3 of you went there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, how neat is
that? We all landed at about the same time and met in the...
We went through customs together.
Yeah.
Do you have time to do cultural stuff while you're there? Go see things, or
we had exactly one day.
One day.
Yeah.
And we packed it. It was
we great. Did.
What did Colleen you guys organized go see? A
tour. Got a guy to drive us around and see all the things and get some food. And yeah, we had fun.
That is good.
Yeah, that's good. Food?
Yes.
Food really good.
Yeah.
We ate camel.
We did.
Is it like stringy, like a horse?
No, it was delicious.
I've never eaten horse, but
yeah, I don't have horse on my list either. I don't know, I haven't done the horse, but I think it's stringy. That's what I've read. I don't know. I watched a lot of the Beverly Hills.
Goat, I think, than anything else I can.
Yeah, kind of like goat.
Kind of a fatty dense. Yeah, it was nice.
Was it like a stew or a hamburger?
Stew.
No.
Well, yeah. Sort of like a stew on rice. There's a whole thing, like, you know, the big metal pot, they flip it upside down and, you know, the rice comes out and it's all golden and beautiful. Yeah. I could talk about food this whole podcast. Okay.
This is now a food podcast, FYI.
All the kooky foods they make stew, like dogs and cats and Asia, whatever. It's always stew. I don't know. Mm. On that note.
I can't comment there.
Did you guys do Paul McCartney together too, or it's just happenstance?
No, different eras, I think. I just did some content at 2016, maybe around. Stop motion piece, hand-drawn animated piece, and then some 3D CG. But Colleen, when were you there?
I was actually on it in 2016. And so I was on it on the tail end of his tour. And then I took it to Desert Trip when they did that big giant old cella festival, as old they were calling it. Yeah. Oh, right. In the desert. So but yeah,
I didn't tour with them at all. I do the usually make the thing and then hand it over to the media server people.
Yeah. Was that Egypt Station? Is that that album that you guys were doing? Is that the tour, or did he tour on that? Or
no. Oh, what was the name of the tour? It was like The One or something like that. I can't remember.
I actually just dropped off today. I have one of the very early Beatles posters. I just dropped off to get linen back because it's starting to come apart, but it's from like 62 or 63. Cool. Yeah, it's really old. It's really neat. Anyway, so I have to ask here, what is a disguise programmer?
It's a media server. So it's basically you know how Grand MA lighting desks have become kind of synonymous in the lighting world. This is what you program on. So it's the same thing for a lot of concerts and things like that. The disguise servers have basically found that niche in there. And of course there's others, but you know, it's the main contender in a lot of bidding wars and stuff like that. It has great horsepower and it can make sure that the graphics that people want are actually portrayed properly. So
I was thinking like you're like the Inspector Gadget.
Like, it used like to video be called stuff D3. Or something.
I mean, it sounds very like, oh.
I've got an entire strange little toolkit, but yeah.
So how did you get into what you do? I'll start with you, Colleen, if you don't mind. What was the catalyst that drove you in the direction you're in now?
Happenstance. So, I mean, it was kind of one of those situations where one thing led to another that led to another. And I just somehow found myself basically on the road, and I found myself doing these type of jobs. And then I had a very good, I guess you want to say intuition on signal flow. And so that kind of led me into more of the server world and that kind of world.
What was your first nationwide tour?
I used to tour with WWE.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. So they were actually my first real kind of like on the road kind of tour.
So I had Snake Sabo on here from Skid Row.
Oh, okay.
And he just went, they took the deepest dive of wrestling, which I know like nothing about. And it was hours. I had to do like 3 or 4 episodes. Because I did one with them for like, you know, the usual, we did like an hour, we're chatting away. And then he's like, you know, I got to pick up my kids. Can we do this again in an hour? What else do you want to talk about, Snake? You know, but Snake is a great storyteller. So he's like, well, we'll come back in an hour. We'll figure it out. I'm like, all right. So I called up my buddy who was a WWE wrestler. His name was Damian Sandow.
I know him. Yeah.
Sweetheart, such a nice guy. So Aaron is his name. And so I brought him on as a surprise, you know.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, we're back with our special guest.
And, you know, and Snake knew more about his career than he did. It was incredible how awesome it was. But it was a fun one. You know, they're nice guys, a lot of these WWE guys. They're cool. It's just they're nice
beautiful. People. Yeah. I say it was like touring with 72 older brothers that I didn't want. So
you really have an older brother?
No. So.
No one to compare then. No one to
But if I had, I'm an older sister, so I can kind of get an idea of how an older brother would be.
Okay. How about you, Olivia? What got you into the hemisphere you work in?
Well, I actually was a painting major when I was in college. And I kind of quickly realized, what's that?
Did you paint that behind you?
I did actually. Yeah. Oh,
beautiful.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Thanks. You know, I kind of, my second year in, I realized that I didn't love just always being by myself in a studio. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love being by myself. Don't get me wrong. I'm definitely an introvert, but, I realized that I didn't know I wanted to always be in solitude and always have to come up with every single part of my art. And I was drawn to the idea of being a collaborator on a project where I could bring my own piece, but then not be the full responsibility. So I thought about set design for a little while, and I was assisting a set designer named Justin Townsend. He's known more as a lighting designer, but he's in the Broadway world. And that was right in the beginning when they started really doing projection design more in the theater. Mm-hmm. And I worked on this show called A Night with Janis Joplin, which went to Broadway. And the projection in that was my first sort of like moment of realizing, like sitting behind the computer of the designer and knowing that I had used some of those programs in school, After Effects and Photoshop. And I just realized that projection was basically a way to paint super, super big. And I just loved that. So it was those two things that really solved a puzzle for me. And then I just kept going with it.
Monet water lilies, large and in charge.
No, more like, you know, simple gestures. I mean, I'm a contemporary art nerd. I love modern art. And so, but when you really think about, you know, like even something as simple as, not simple, like something like a Rothko, or, you know, like a big painting that has beautiful washes of color, the amount of paint resources, time that it actually takes to even experiment on that kind of a scale, that annoyed me. Like, I like to be able to just throw something up and see if it works. So that's what I love about video projection, that you can make a simple gesture, but because it's so big, it has a particular impact that you just wouldn't have on a smaller scale.
Do you paint on canvas anymore or not lately?
I do. It's just, you know, I have so little time these days, but during the pandemic, I really leaned into it since we were all, you know, trying to figure out what we were going to do.
So you were dabbling in creative stuff always. You had your music, and then you're in the, and you're just trying to, I guess, find your path, but you wanted creativity.
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I grew up in a family of musicians, so I was always around music and art and performance, and it never even crossed my mind that art wasn't a feasible career option.
Yeah. So I was a mid-century modern contemporary art dealer for about a decade.
Were you really?
I really was. Yeah.
That's, oh my God. We probably have so much. Do you have an art collection?
Yeah. You know, not as extensive as it once was. I sold a lot. And then the stuff I liked, you've got to be really into it to
carry,
you know, most of the stuff. I had a Man Ray paper mache mask.
Ooh, cool.
You're an art dork.
I love
dork,
Man Ray.
Like, wow. But most people be like, who's that?
Like, no, I feel like Kirsten and I are probably like, oh, Man Ray is like amazing for all the like photograms and all of that stuff that he did. Like, a lot of my early experiments with video design, I was looking at that as a starting point of like, how do I get to sort of an abstraction?
I liked them a lot, and it was because of that. It was walking. Everybody keeps picking on, but they always Spain. What is it? Everybody taught, that's the artist that everybody brings up. Not Picasso, but Salvador Dali. Everybody, Salvador Dali, Salvador Dali. Oh God, there's other people.
Yeah.
There's other people.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, it was a good career. I liked it. And then I got into memorabilia a bit after that. But memorabilia was interesting because they didn't really care where you got it and what you paid for it. They want it.
Right.
So with art, you can quickly look up and see where I got it and what I paid for it, which is great for provenance. But the second side of it is, why are you charging me double? Who the hell are you?
Right.
Wait for the next call, thanks. You know, and so it's a tough career. You have smaller margins.
Oh, totally. I mean, I know actually a lot more about that than you think. My first job was working at a contemporary art gallery. Actually, I worked for a gallery called Samson in Boston for 5 years, and still have a relationship with those artists. Yeah.
You know, I was just starting out, and I called this gallery in New York. I was researching an artist. I can't remember the name of. It was really neat. I swear it looked like Marge Simpson, but it was done in the 20s. And the lady there, we had a good chat and she had talked to me. I guess I brought up I was a roadie and I don't know. Years later, I call Christie's and she's like, do you still have that piece by Bobbity Blah? And I'm like, before that, she says, you're Joel Miller, right? You were the one who worked in music. You worked for Stone Temple Pilots. And I'm like, uh-oh. You know, I'm just thinking, I'm like, I'm never going to work with Christie's for sure. And I'm kind of like, why do you remember that? And she's like, oh, I remember everything, hon. And I'm like, I'm like, I feel bad for your husband. She's all, and you damn well should too. Cause when he gets home, I'm throwing him a whooping tonight. You wouldn't believe it. And she just goes on this tangent. In the meantime, you're I like, can sign the piece to Christie's with her. And I am.
It's cool.
Yeah. It was really funny. So people's nice. Memories, you know, but she's like, yeah, it was cool. But it was, I can't think of the artist's name, but he's neat. If I can think of it, you guys should look him up. Cause it's just very early on for such a different look and design, a very interesting cat. So anyhow,
cool.
Kirsten, definitely not last least, but amaze us with what you do, what got you going.
Got me. So origin story, I started in computer engineering actually. And I had never drawn really or painted or anything before deciding to switch tracks, but I was working, you know, put myself through undergrad as a local crew stagehand at the Hilton Coliseum. So I was loading a lot of trucks, do the 3 a.m. do the 3 a.m. thing, go to sleep for a few hours, get up for 8 a.m. class sort of deal. You know how it goes. As I was kind of nearing the end of that degree, I had also been working at the Virtual Reality Application Center at Iowa State. So dabbling a bit in the motion graphics exactly, but the, you know, the animation and the level design and sort of the game design art thing. So kind of taking some classes alongside of that in art to try and find that balance somewhere where I would be useful there. But as I was getting a little older and wiser and figuring out what I was doing, I was realizing that the only places I was getting hired, and indeed all of the research projects that I was doing, was actually they're all defense projects, especially specifically drone stuff.
So they pay on time is what we're getting at.
They do, and they pay fairly well. But I couldn't do the mental gymnastics that made me kind of okay with that. And outside of that, you know, in back then, years and years ago at this point, the, you know, virtual reality was the only people paying for it.
Yeah.
And the only people really hiring for what I was doing. So I sort of bailed, like flip table throughout whole career, start over. And so went like full on into animation and graduated in time for the 2008 financial crisis.
Oh.
So all of my fantastic job offers just evaporated. Oh. Three of them, or two were fantastic, one was okay, and just gone. So I've done this whole pandemic, you know, whole thing, whole world evaporate thing twice. This it was sort of like that first time meme.
You're not above to loading trucks again if you have
no
to.
Well, if there were trucks to load, I certainly would have in 2020. Yeah. You know, but yeah, so I went back, yeah, loading trucks, and then I went and visited a friend, you know, in this kind of downtime I had while I was trying to figure out my life, went and saw a Nine Inch Nails concert. God, I'm wearing a Nine Inch Nails shirt. Anyway, but it was Lights in the Sky, and it had all this audio reactive and, you know, sound reactive, touch reactive, all this like light reactive programming in it. So it was all this sort of interactive animation, interactive video. And I'm like, well, shit, this is everything I know how to do. Like, I'm already dealing with human computer interaction, and, you know, I've got this whole degree mostly in computer science and computer engineering, and I've got this whole degree in animation and video, and, you know, I've got the aesthetic, plus I've loaded trucks for the last 10 years. you know, yeah. This is everything. How do I do it? How do I start here? So
have you guys gone to those immersive experiences, like the Van Gogh or the Monet ones? Have you gone to any of those, or have you guys worked on any of them?
I haven't. I find that less fascinating.
I haven't gone, so I don't know what to compare it to, but why less interesting?
Well, it's a, I mean, for me, and I know a lot of people, this isn't, I'm, you know, I'm old and dated and we've done a lot of projection. Like, it's just a lot of projection in a big empty warehouse, and it's not very bright and it's not very saturated. And it doesn't, to me, feel like the pictures I see of even the professionally taken ones that they've definitely edited feel like the experience of being in the painting. It's sort of,
it's like the Damien Hirst of contemporary art. It's just not that good.
Yeah. Well, and I don't want to say that because I know it's a lot of work, but like for me, that experience, the experience of seeing the paintings by Van Gogh, I did go to a Van Gogh exhibit at the, what's that museum in Pasadena? Norton Simon.
Norton Simon's a great museum.
It's just a little, it was just all of his paintings of nighttime, all in one gallery. And it was incredible. And they're all this big, you know, they're these little studies. And I was like, what you're talking about, Olivia, and I'm realizing as I'm saying this, I'm not, that's not a, it's not a cut on like, make it bigger, it's more interesting. But there was something very gripping about the actual medium that it was in. And the light and the reflecting versus the light emissive versus all this stuff that, so yeah, for like to see the Van Gogh exhibit, you know, and especially in the pandemic with its little circles on the floor that you go stand in, you know, for some people that's incredible, and that's how they, you know, it brings the art to life for them. And I think that's great. Like, but for me, it feels washed out and commercial. And, you know, that Norton Simon exhibit was.
See, I think the commercials, exactly. That's the word.
One was 50. They wanted me to pay $58 plus parking to go in and see something really big when I went and supported the Norton Simon for $12. And, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like if nothing else, though, I mean, obviously, now that you're saying it's $50, then that maybe changes what I was thinking about it. But I guess the only reason I feel a little differently about those is just that it brings one more person in the door of understanding that they have access to a museum or even appreciation for art. Like, I think that, I mean, it's my comfort zone to go into a museum and just sort of observe paintings and be by myself. But I think for a lot of people, that's a really intimidating experience. So it's like, maybe that Van Gogh immersive is the first stepping stone to then, oh, maybe we should go to the Met or whatever. I just designed over the pandemic, actually, I designed a piece for this brand new contemporary art museum in St. Petersburg, Florida. And it's pretty much like the closest you could get to something like that. It's a super wide, super large 6-minute projection piece that just creates the whole atmosphere for the room. But that the mission of that place is that it's the tickets are really cheap, and it's, you know, it's in a community that is underserved in terms of cultural access. So I guess maybe I connected those two, but maybe it doesn't apply if it's so expensive to go. Then it's like, well, then it's just rich people who could go to the museum who just go to see the Van Gogh. I don't know.
Well, things will change. Maybe is I know they're going to continue to be more popular. Those exhibits are doing really well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at $65 a pop or whatever, they probably really
look up what it actually is.
Yeah. That's really the price. Then they'll
probably Groupon it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Any of you guys have any hiccups that you would? So usually I'll ask these guys, you know, what venues have you worked at where you're kind of like, I can't believe I'm here. It's terrible. You know, Cosmo, obviously. We talked about Cosmo Wilson a little bit. Somebody wanted to come on Cosmo and I vetoed it. Instead, I brought on three people. But you guys have any hiccups that come to mind maybe as you were creating things that developed into something else that might have been maybe off the cusp, like a good thing where you're kind of like, wow, that actually looks kind of neat, maybe I'll stick with it, or anything that you guys can think of like that?
A happy accident, I mean,
maybe happy accident, or okay. Or you could talk about a problematic rock star. People love that crap.
Oh boy. I mean, Colleen.
Do you guys
and
know
I
who Steven Tyler is?
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah.
But Colleen, I think he
and I
knows.
Went through
he knows.
Hell in 2019.
I don't.
No.
No, he's yeah. Yeah, no, he doesn't know.
He's
so my
a
girlfriend's
kind of-
name is Erin Brady. So when he was married to her, it was like, oh. I think he got divorced from her though. He did. Anyway.
Yeah, I think his personal assistant / girlfriend, I thought her name was Laura, but I could be wrong.
Did he like the stuff you guys put together?
Yeah.
He loved the content. Yeah. No, I was also his video director. So, I mean, there's very few things in the world that is more embarrassing than having your lead singer call you by name from the stage. So when he's decided he doesn't like something, and that's Mr. Tyler. So he doesn't even march to his own drummer. He marches to his own different marching band. It's just, you know.
Yeah. I've had a lot of Aerosmith people on here, a lot of the crews and stuff. And
that's because the turnover is so high. It's kind of one of those, like, you have to like do Aerosmith, like, you know, right, so you have that war stories. You're not allowed to be a real roadie until you've like dealt with that kind of thing. It was like, here's your suit. Oh, you've gone through Aerosmith. Here's your new Dakota ring. You know, welcome to the club. So.
All right. But no, it was fun. When I was first putting this together, I'm in my mid-40s now, and so a lot of my friends have kids, and my friend's daughter is in fifth grade, and she was with her little friends, and collectively, they came up with a question that they said I should ask every guest. It's actually proven to be a really good one, and so my question to each of you is, when did you first feel famous? Now, if fame is not a road you want to go down in answering the question, that's totally fine. Remember, this was little kids. But when was there a time in your career that was a catalyst to the next level? When was there a moment that you'd like to cherish? What would you say each of you would choose?
Oh, man.
I actually, the rose and thorn so far of my career actually was that Aerosmith show. The thorn meaning that it was just really, really hard work and really long hours and stressful and chaotic, but the rose of it was, it was the first opportunity for me to really lean into my style as an artist for a concert. And, what I built most specifically for that was this 35-minute pre-show that played in lieu of an opening act. And that entire 35-minute film was composed of a lot of archival stuff, but, it was basically entirely art directed and animated by me. Not basically, it was entirely art directed and animated by me. And it, I really felt proud of it as a piece. Like, I kind of went into the room being like, even if we make so many changes and we don't keep this, I'm so proud of this piece. And I remember we showed it to the band. We had kind of a screening for them so they could see it. And I'm so nervous as they're watching. I'm just like, oh my God, I'm going to hear that they need to change this, notes, whatever. And when the piece finished, all the band members got up and turned around and gave me a round of applause. Hey. And that was like the most generous thing, you know, I recognized in that moment of just how lucky I was to have that recognition and, you know, that appreciation. So I'll definitely remember that one.
Did forever. You get it? Let's hear it for Amy.
No, I think they did call me by my right name at that moment, but yeah, it was really cool. Really cool.
That's great.
Just to interject, that piece was really amazing. It was beautifully done. So it was a very huge highlight of that show.
Can we find that kind of stuff online, or is it owned by the band and they keep it under wraps, or how does that work?
I'm sure it's online somewhere. I'm sure somebody has put it online.
I have some samples on my website. But not a full, I mean, obviously not a full string out. That's obviously the rights of the band.
Yeah.
But you'll have to come, I guess the residency is going back up in Vegas. So
in June?
You can go back to Vegas and see it.
There you go.
If you could say hi to Cosmo.
Yeah, I would.
He'll be there. Yeah.
Yeah, I would. I like Cosmo. What's not to like? I wore my Hawaiian shirt when he came on.
Nice.
I had to.
He's the best.
Yeah, he's a sweetheart. He's a good
guy. I love the fact that he used to own 365 Hawaiian shirts. One friend. So he told me about that one.
So honest, I was like, he owns Cosmo.com.
What?
Yeah.
Has anybody ever tried to buy it from him?
It's a huge story. Ask him about it. It's crazy. Oh, Cosmopolitan obviously wanted it.
Oh, I'm sure.
Afterwards, I was like, we had finished the interview and he's telling me about it. I'm like, what else? house, you know. Then what happened? So it was this whole thing, but he owns Cosmo.com.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's kind of neat. All right, who's up next? What do you got? When did you first feel famous, Kirsten?
I've got a couple of like really kind of shining moments in my career. Giving Annie Lennox a hug.
She's great. That's isn't
she came to it, like, this was when we were still working out of our house. She's like, well, we'll just come to your studio and we'll look at some things. And I'm like, well, we work out of our house, but you're welcome. And came and sat on our couch and drank tea and looked at content for her LACMA performance. The VMAs last year, working for the Foo Fighters, I did their three song medley kind of as they were getting the Icon Award. And it was a massive stage, like two sides, like an A and a B stage, this big moon man that's projected on a flag. It's also projected on, and it's just LED floor, LED everywhere. And we dug through the archives in contact with all of the various MTV and all of that, and put together this moving collage of all of their music videos and tapes of performances they'd done through the years, and just hundreds and hundreds of images. And it took a lot to put together. Of course, it had to happen fast because nothing ever is enough lead time with a thing like that. But watching them, because I was actually at the VMAs working in kind of a different capacity too, watching them stand on stage the first time, you know, we threw it up to show them, and just like, wow, like, look, we did that. Like, oh, there, we did that. Remember that thing?
That's cool.
Like, yeah. And especially now, the loss of Taylor, just even more meaningful to me than like to have been even a small part of that last few years.
Yeah. I was supposed to have him on here.
So
it was unfortunate. Yeah, there's a street busker in Scotland, and I was going to bring him on with the street busker and surprise the street busker. So we've just been trying to figure dates, but the Foo Fighters have been so busy. Yeah. It was a little bit difficult, so it didn't happen. But I wrote to the guy and I was like, so here's the deal. Like, I just was going to let you know, this guy actually listened to your music and he did like it, and he was going to come on. So keep playing, man. Keep playing. I told him we'll figure out something else. But really, really talented dude. Ben Monteith, if you ever listened to, really, really amazing performers. So anyway, but yeah, Taylor was a pretty cool guy. He was a good guy.
So yeah, everyone in that camp was good people.
They're nice. Yeah, so. What do we got coming? Not to end on a dime.
No, please.
Sorry. I was going to say, I don't really even have an answer. I'm not really sure I have a very good answer to that question. This is not supposed to sound in any way to diminish anything that I've done, but in comparison to the other two ladies that I'm here with, they do really amazing creative things. Like, what they get to do is stuff that makes people famous. It's like, I'm the button pusher behind the scenes that basically just makes sure that what they have done is actually
The movie was called The Wizard of Oz. It was.
I liked Inspector Gadget, so I liked that one. Inspector Gadget. I did like that one. But no, this past summer, I toured with Alanis Morissette and Garbage, and I was her video director. And that was like the first time that I really got to be creative in the sense where anything that went to the screen was basically my doing in a way. I shouldn't say that. That actually seems way too... I'll probably ask you to edit that part out. But it was more like I let my camera guys kind of run wild, and what they produced was so amazing. And so what I viewed it as is that I would just stitch their pretty pictures all together to tell a story. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of fun. It was like, and I kept calling it summer camp, and I still will continue to call it summer camp because the lineup was great. The people were great. Everybody was down to earth. Everybody was just happy to be back. We had just survived the pandemic. We were one of those tours that was right on the brink of summer. And we also then shot Garbage. So the Garbage camp came to us and was basically, we were talking about how many cameras and whatnot. And we kind of somehow landed on this idea that the entire video department would also do garbage. So we did an hour-long garbage set, and then we did a two-hour-long Atlanta set every night. And I kept asking my camera guys, my handheld guys, like, you guys okay? That's a long time building a camera. Yeah. And they were like, no, this is great. I mean, and they were great troopers, and they're very, very excellent camera people. Like, I can't talk them up enough for what they were able to pull off. I mean, like, crazy shots. They were always searching. They were always looking, you know, they totally took what I said to heart, which was like, if you guys want to do something that you're normally told not to do, try it and we'll just go with it. Cause there's a lot of people that are like, no, I don't want that. Or I don't want that. Or I don't want that. I was like, no, just try it. Let's just see what we can do. Let's just all see what we can do. And I thought we had some really beautiful shows, really cool things. We had some really good fun. We had a lot of fun. So I really enjoyed that. So that's kind of mine.
I was friendly with a lady named Jody, who was her assistant for years. And she did something in LA, Alanis did. It was a full orchestra with her performing. I'm trying to remember, but we got invited to it because of Jody. And it was like her doing the music for a movie, I think is what it was. So it was all live with her singing and everything. It was super, super neat. It was kind of like, well, I guess it was art is what it was. It was like, I'm trying to think of her name. She was big in the 70s. I think her song, something about Superman, but it was the whole performance art aspect of it. And I felt like she was doing this performance art piece, and it was really fun to see. I like Alanis Morissette. She's neat. And to stay relevant too, it's hard, you know, it's really difficult. Yeah. So got to hand it to her for that kind of stuff. And those garbage people too. I didn't want to leave.
They were lovely. They were so lovely.
Yeah. Well, it's good. Well, I think I'm out of questions unless you guys want to ask each other something or if there's anything else you wanted to bring up now that I bagged on Damien Hirst.
You do that all day as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of Raymond Pettibone. He actually did the artwork on the cover of my book. And that was
cool.
Oh yeah, I was so excited. I couldn't believe it. I don't know if anybody else or anybody would buy the book because of Raymond Pettibone, but it's a sense of accomplishment. It's of being letting people associate with you that you think are really cool, you know? And so it's neat. There's something to be said. I still love the arts. And so it was good. I was actually an art history major and I didn't know what the hell to do with that. You know? So I started doing art department of film. I hated it. And then I started touring on the road and had nothing to do with art, but it was great. So,
or does it have everything to do with art though? You know, like that's
the thing I liked about touring was you get days off, and even though you're tired, you can go see stuff on their dime. You can get to go to the museums and cultural things that you wouldn't have necessarily made it to in your life. And that was a luxury that I really appreciated.
Yeah.
That was good.
I love that too. A day off in the city. I mean, it's so rare that you have a day off that you don't have to do a thousand edits, but when you do have that day and you're able to go to, you know, whatever art place, art museum is there, it's really special, really cool.
That's pretty good. Yeah. Well, thank you ever so much. I look forward to talking to you guys all again. And if you ever need anything, yell at me.
For having us.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
For sure. Thanks for watching. Don't forget to like and subscribe by clicking the round button on the bottom right. To learn more about me or the guests on the show, go to joelrody.com. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, or TikTok. The handle's Joel Rody. And don't forget, when you party like a rock star, don't be a dick.